Welcome to the CineSoul Podcast, where we use cinema to explore what matters to us most. I'm your host, Jorge Castellanos. On today's episode, we'll discuss our favorite films of 2018. And I'm joined by my friend and podcaster extraordinaire, Ben Helms. Ben is the person who got me and many others into podcasting through his project, The Overthink Podcast Network, and we've guested on each other's pods before. He's also a passionate lover of film like me. Welcome to CineSoul, Ben.
It's been a dream of mine. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope a dream and not a nightmare.
Well, I'll tell you in 45 minutes to an hour. We'll see.
Hey, and I just wanted to publicly thank you for the Overthink. I know it's on semi-hiatus, maybe dormant, and all the work that you did there, especially the producing and editing, including this episode, which you're going to produce and edit, and creating the pod theme music for CineSoul Podcast. So thank you very much for that, man. Appreciate your efforts.
Thank you for hosting CineSoul so much. Thank you for guesting on on all the other podcasts we did. And doing this podcast tonight is definitely a creative outlet, a way to talk about the art of film. And it's something that I haven't been able to do since we haven't done any Overthink pods in 6 months. So thank you for giving me that outlet and the opportunity to do it again.
My pleasure. I can't think of anyone I'd rather do it with. And the fact that we get to do this after a little bit of a hiatus feels great to me, too. So I'm really happy and excited for what we're going to talk about.
Definitely.
So just for our listeners' sake, I know that a podcast about our favorite films from 2018 might be a little bit late in the arena because award season's come and gone. But I'll just say that there are too many great films, which there are still some more that we haven't seen. And we just thought, hey, we can't wait any longer. Let's just do it now. Come on.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of films, too. I live in a rural town in Northern California. So a bunch of my top 10, I didn't even see until this past month, even. I wasn't able to. So definitely helpful to have it later.
Good on you for getting there.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I got the luxury of living in a more metropolitan area that's got plenty of screens around me. And I was able to see really all the films I wanted to see, except one. I'll say right off the top of the podcast that I didn't see Burning. So that doesn't appear on my list anywhere. And I think it'll probably end up being on a list. But I have yet to see it. Unfortunately, it came and went very quickly in my area, and I didn't catch it. So bad on me. But anyways, we got plenty of films to talk about. And first of all, let me try to define for the listener my criteria for my list. I don't call my list the best of, or I don't call it the top films. I call it my favorites because it really is more about a very, specific point of view from me about how that film, in the words of CineSoul's Ames, matters to me most, which is usually, if it has a high impact on me personally, and if it's got good cinema craft, then that'll usually end up being on my lists. And if you go to my jcspace.com website, where I list the films and write about them and write about other things that impact me, you'll see that I have a rating system. And the top rating for anything is a must-see. And basically, all the films that are on my lists are must-sees, with the very very last segment of them being below that. So I'm not even going to end up probably talking about any of those films, but who knows? But anyways, that's my criteria, just so people know. It's not really a best of that I think about. It's a favorite to me. What impacted me most, plus what kind of good cinema craft did it have to it? I could have seen a film that had a high impact, but it was just, not well made. Or I could see a very well-made film that just didn't do much for me. And neither of those films would end up being on my favorites list. So, Ben, do you have a criteria about your list? How do you develop yours?
I don't think mine is as well thought out as yours. I like everything you said, especially the high impact, right? Because I think about, is it an emotional impact, an intellectual one? Kind of like what sticks with me? And I also tend to think, the last movie I saw in theaters was my favorite film ever. So I definitely fall into that trap of just like, the film going experience, I mean, overwhelmed with a decent film,
Right.
But I would say that good cinema craft helps that. Bad cinema craft detracts from that or kind of pushes it down on the list. And I think, as you'll see from my top 10, top 12, top 15, whatever it ends up being, is that there is, it's very subjective. And I'm totally willing to say that and admit that. Just like you, right? I'm not going to say this number one should have won the Oscar, should have won this or whatever. Right. You know, everyone's top 10 is different. And mine is just as subjective and emotionally dependent and, I guess, experientially dependent to my experience and personalized. But I'm to that, having said that, I will fight to the death saying that my top 10 is better than yours.
As it should be, sir. The gauntlet has been thrown
down. Exactly. No.
And just to get a little bit more specific about my list, it becomes more apparent if you visit my site, jcspace.com, to see the list. But I broke it up this year. Last year, I had basically a list broken up into two sets of 22 films each. And this year, I cut that total number down by two and split it up into basically three sets of 10 plus a last set of 10. And that last set of 10,
That's amazing.
31 through 40, basically are the films that, as I said earlier in my rating system, are not must-see. Mm-hmm. They're not my top rating. But they're just below it. And, you know, when you start making, at least when I start making these lists, it's like, it's hard to just cut it down, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there to like and to feel like it had an impact on me. And anyways, I couldn't leave that last 10 off as sort of honorable mentions, if you will.
Yeah.
But basically the rest of the list, really the 30 films, I broke up into three segments of 10 as it worked out. And really, within each 10, for me, like the first 10 films, I didn't want to say, hey, here's number one, number two, number three, etc. They're all really close into how much I felt like they were my favorites for all the elements I've discussed already. So I just kind of list them alphabetically, and I'll talk about those in a second.
Gotcha.
But there was a difference between the first 10 and the second 10 and the third 10. So that's why there's three 10s rather than just 1 through 30.
Right.
So that's kind of how I broke up my list. How'd you break up your list?
So we should say sometime in here, and now is the time, that you saw many more movies than I did in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
I think we had opposite problems in me. I mean, and I had MoviePass. We both did. So I still saw dozens of films in the theater, dozens more at home.
Yeah.
But add a zero to that amount, and it's probably as many as you saw. So my opposite problem in making my list was finding 10 movies that I could say that I loved or genuinely were 10 best films or favorite films, I guess, of 2018.
Right.
I think I spent a week, and as I would think about films, you know, I'd look at lists on IMDb or whatnot of the highest grossing films or whatever. I'd look through my MoviePass list of the movies I saw, and I just really didn't like a lot of movies in 2018 is what I realized. And I'm proud of the 10 I have, the 12 to 14 that I came up with, some of the runner-ups. I really do like those films. So it wasn't hard to find 12 movies that I liked, 10 movies I liked. But
right.
I guess I was expecting a top 10 to be this like hard, whittled down, like these are going to be with me till the day I die, 10 movies from a whole year. And it really was like, no, these are 10 movies I like, and maybe the top three or four are ones that I'm going to love forever.
Cool.
But yeah.
Well, that's, in some ways, that seems a lot easier than my approach.
Yeah. Hey, man. We made our top 10s. We got there.
But we did. And yeah. Congrats to us. Yay.
Yeah. But also, we do have overlap, we should say. So
yeah.
There are plenty of movies on your list that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have a lower standard or anything like that at all. It's more just you've experienced a higher level of filmmaking than I have this year.
And there are movies on your list that I haven't seen either. So
perfect. All right.
So, good. You know, even Steven. Hey, let's go ahead and hear your 10 favorites. Let's go through them.
And if there's overlapping, we'll discuss those later. Or do you want to discuss them as I go through?
Why don't you just list your films now?
Okay.
And then I'll list mine, and then we'll talk about the overlap.
Perfect. So at 10, I had Avengers: Infinity War. At 9, Black Mirror: Bandersnatch, which I don't even know if that's technically a film. I'm sure Spielberg would say it's not a film. It deserves to be destroyed because it didn't come in the theaters. But anyway, 8, Hold the Dark. 7, Widows. 6, Black Panther. 5, Roma. 4, Sorry to Bother You. 3, Annihilation. 2, Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse. And number 1, Free Solo.
Yeah, definitely overlaps with some of my list as well. And let me just list my top 10. Again, these aren't in order of 1 through 10, so to speak. So I'm just going to list them alphabetically.
Sure.
But Annihilation, Black Panther, Black Klansman, Cold War, First Reform, Free Solo, The Rider, Roma, Shoplifters, and You Were Never Really Here. So yeah, there was definitely overlap to our list, man. Why don't we start talking about some of those overlaps? Let's start with the first one, Free Solo. I know you just saw that recently.
Oh man.
And actually just saw it for the second time, right?
Yeah. So saw it in theaters. Again, rural area, so they had one screening in my area, one night, one single screening. And so me and buddy went, saw it last week, and then that night I bought it because I knew I had to see it again. Had a couple buddies over last night who saw it. And it's going into the screening, and obviously the second time, I knew the characters. I knew even some of the story beats behind it.
Right.
I love Yosemite and rock climbing, and it's just that world of outdoors and wilderness. So I knew the plot. I even knew how it ended. I know that Alex Honnold, the main character, I know he doesn't die because I remember the day that this happened in 2017.
Right.
And it just shook the rock climbing
world. The actual historical event.
Right. So I knew enough about the situation to know how it ended. But not only even knowing all that, not only did it keep my attention throughout in both viewings, but throughout the film inspired me, challenged me, pulled at my heartstrings, and just never let me go. There wasn't a moment where I was like, okay, can we like speed this along? And it's a long film. I think it's 2 hours. And it does all those things that documentaries don't usually do, especially ones, I think, on kind of like extreme sports, which are just kind of like, look at these extreme sports. They're extreme.
Right.
Look how extreme they are.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of cheating for a film to feature Yosemite, which is one of my favorite places in the world. I've gone there every year of my life. And
it's like visual eye candy, man.
It really is, man. And for me specifically, it helped Free Solo edge out everything else. And I think in the contest for Ben's favorite films of 2018,
right,
that a lot of filmmakers are vying for to get to the top of that list.
They are.
You have no idea. Right. Featuring Yosemite prominently will help you get to the top of that list.
Good to know out there, film production community.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I totally agree with you. I remember seeing this film in the theater. I've only seen it once, and I saw it in my local art house. And I didn't remember the historical event. I'm not sure I was really aware of it, although I've got some friends that are very much into rock climbing, and I'll get into that a little bit more. But I remember seeing this film and, one, being blown away by the spectacular photography.
Oh, my gosh.
The fact that they were able to mount remote cameras onto the face of the mountain and then use those and ground cameras and actually manned cameras was great.
Yeah.
And it's some of those most spectacular footage I think I've ever seen of Yosemite from perspectives that you never get to see.
Yeah, Jimmy Chin, amazing photographer.
Amazing photographer, and his crew was just amazing. But really what cemented the film so much for me as far as being much more than an extreme sports documentary, as you said, is the relational aspect between Alex and his girlfriend Sani.
Yeah.
And how that impacts not only his head about climbing,
right,
but also impacts the filmmaking crew's head about shooting him climbing.
Yeah.
Worrying that their presence is going to negatively affect his chances. And it was great to really delve into the background of Alex so that you could understand, you know, where he came from as far as his upbringing and his mental makeup to make him so risk free, I guess. I'm not quite even sure how to talk about it, but just fantastic stuff. And really the humanity of him and his girlfriend going through whatever they're going through as they sort of get to understand a little bit about where each is coming from and how that's going to affect Alex's climbing really, you know, sort of made it a 360 film for me as far as the kind of impact that it had. It was more than just amazing footage about an amazing feat. It was really about a relationship and how that relationship affected everything around it too, including the people making the film. So not only, you know, props to chin, but to his producing and directing partner and his wife, Claire Popkin.
Oh, sorry. No, his wife is Elizabeth Chai Vassarelli.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm reading the wrong person on my list.
Yeah.
My bad. I think she brought a great deal of skill, especially to the relational stuff. And I just thought it was a great film. So definitely happy to see that you enjoyed it so much too. And one of the other personal reasons, you know, you had your personal reasons as far as the fact that it's Yosemite and you love Yosemite so much.
For
and
sure,
that,
yeah.
that sort of had an impact on you choosing it. But I have some friends that are a couple and they're kind of very reflective of Alex and Sani in the sense of, my friend is a rock climber and my other friend who's married to him has had to deal with what does that mean in their relationship. And he's had to rethink what he's willing to risk based on their marriage. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of times where I'm watching the film and I kept thinking of my friends.
Right.
And you know them too. So our friends, I guess I should say.
Sure.
And I even talked to them. They're like, you know, I recommended they go see the film. I urged them to go check it out. They did. And they were like, oh my God, we thought about ourselves all the time.
That's fantastic.
So that was kind of a little plus for me as far as why, you know, another factor in it being in my favorites list, but really big props to the filmmakers and to Alex and everybody involved. Just a beautiful film. And if you haven't seen it, folks, really, really strongly recommend it. Even to you film goers that maybe don't see that many documentaries, I definitely – this is more than just a documentary. It's a whole film that feels much more mainstream than most docs.
Yeah, it has the story beats of a narrative film.
Yeah, well said.
It's really hard for me to grasp why he wants this. But if he doesn't do this stuff, he'd regret it.
Everybody who has made free soloing a big part of their life is dead now.
What's another film on the list that overlaps?
What about Annihilation? That's on both of our top tens.
Yes, definitely.
Do you want to talk about that?
I've been talking for a little while.
All right, we actually did a podcast about this film.
Yeah.
About a year ago, probably. I think it was last spring. But yeah, to me, and it wasn't until we sat down and did the podcast with you, me, Jason, and I believe Dominic Lang, right?
Yes.
The core four of the film analysts of The Overthink. But to me, it was just layers upon layers of metaphor and story and acting. I thought Alex Garland did a great job of kind of hiding the potential plot holes and potential questions I would have upon, you know, multiple viewings that would kind of normally arise, especially in kind of a sci-fi epic like that, with thought-provoking questions, deliberate, well-thought-out mysteries, and just like a solid story and good acting throughout. And so any of those plot holes were just in the back of my mind. I didn't think of them until after the film was already over. And my willing suspension was there the whole time. I there was never a time where I was like, Shimmer, that doesn't add up mathematically. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's a thriller. It's a horror movie, but it also is this slow paced, deep thinking, methodical mystery throughout. And it's not necessarily a film I want to watch a bunch of times over and over. It's not this like good feeling romp or anything. Like, it might just explode my brain if I did that. But yeah, I think from a film-going experience, it was one of the most unique I've ever had. I think the most unique since I watched Arrival the previous year, that just kind of as the movie developed, it never went in a place that I would have predicted throughout the whole film, which I love when films can do that.
Right. Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And, you know, I sort of felt for me this film was definitely greater than the sum of its parts, if you will. I remember when I saw the film, you know, I kind of left the theater going, wow. And huh?
Right, exactly.
And I wrote a review that appears on my site. And I think I wrote that even before we had the podcast, but my comments in the pod might've reflected my thinking at the time that, you know, I started out quoting, Natalie Portman's character, Lena, in the film, who says she gives an answer at the very beginning of the film when she's teaching a bunch of students in university, They ask her a question. She says, I don't know. And I sort of felt like that was my answer about the film. I don't know. I don't know about this film. It poses so many questions. I'm still mulling them over. But they're having an impact, and they can't let go. And I felt over the course of time, that's still my relationship with the film, is although my appreciation for it has deepened and my wrestling with the questions has continued. And I can pick up a conversation about this film anytime, right? Like anybody that wants to talk to this film, let's talk, because there's so much depth there, I think, on so many levels. And then on top of all that, and you mentioned director Alex Garland's sort of approach there, and I loved Ex Machina.
Yeah, same.
And I also felt like these two films, Ex Machina and Annihilation, you know, they're exploring the definition of what's being, you know, what it is to be human, what it is to have entity.
What is sentient?
Yeah, and way other related questions around those things.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of depth that I really appreciate about it. And then on top of all that, oh my gosh, what great cinema craft!
Yes,
beautiful cinematography. You know, you mentioned the acting. There's a set of four women actresses that just do great work and carry the film. Jennifer Jason Leigh, Tuva Novotny, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, Natalie Portman. Yeah, I mentioned her at the top five. Yeah, excuse me, not four. Sure. And then Oscar Isaac, throw him in. Yeah. He was great. And I even liked how, I'm not sure I can even call it a score. I guess the score and soundscape of the film lent so much to the quality of the film.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I never heard anything like that.
You know, the sound design by Ben Barker and music by Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury. I don't know who did what in creating that soundscape, but it was just, you know, perfect for the film. And so all of that combined, it's definitely the film that has stuck with me most from last year.
Wow.
And the film that I know from now on, like many other films that I've encountered in my life, whenever they just appear somewhere, I'm channel surfing and there it is, I'm just going to stop and watch, because that's the kind of experience it was for me. So love that film.
Very, very unique film for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I took my blood last night. It's in me. It's destroying everything.
It's not destroying.
It's making something new.
So let's look at another film that might be overlapping. Let's see.
Roma.
Roma. Oh, of course. Well, we're lucky to be doing this film, in a sense, after the award season. Roma had some great success at the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Winning
Best Director?
Best Director and Best Foreign Language Film, and maybe some others. I can't remember everything. I'm
sure. Yeah.
I don't keep tabs on those award shows too much. Right. I'm not really into them.
Yeah.
But wow, Alfonso Cuarón has just made another amazing piece of art, as far as I'm concerned. One that not only is personally based, because it's roughly kind of autobiographical as far as the neighborhood he grew up in and what Mexico was like at the time of him growing up in those sort of mid-60s, if you will, but also just made a beautiful film that is so cinematic. It's about movie making, right? I know there was a big brouhaha for this last year's Academy Award about them not showing perhaps the winner of cinematography and the winner of the editing awards, you know, live, if you will. And of the two things involved in cinema over every other art form, cinematography and editing is it.
Right.
And
that's a lot of the movie.
Roma had all of that and way much more. And, you know, a best actress nominated lead and beautiful black and white cinematography. Oh, and I don't care that the film, you know, only spent 3 weeks in the theaters just to get the nomination thing and was in wide release on Netflix, it's a great film. But I should say, I guess I do care. You should definitely see the movie in the theater at some point if you can get to a screening somewhere, because it longs to be seen on a huge screen. It's just amazingly beautiful film. So
that's fair.
What do you think of it?
Yeah, I would echo the not that I disagree with anything you said, but echo the amazing achievement of filmmaking that it is. It is similar to Annihilation in the sense that it was kind of mind-blowing in how unique the story arc was. The idea that a movie could be that big and feature entirely a story about Mexico from 50 years ago and entirely in subtitles.
Right.
And it be that successful. That in its own is an awesome achievement, but I would say that throughout the film, there was no scene that I thoroughly enjoyed or was like, that was hilarious, or was like, oh, I wish I could watch that scene again.
Right.
But throughout the story, they did this amazing job of building up this world of 1960s or 70s Mexico City and slowly building scene by scene, developing character and story in a pretty uneventful way through three quarters of the movie, until at the very end, just punching me in the heart.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there in my next door TV, just sobbing. And where for more than half the film, I was like, is this that great? Like that was a cool shot. Like that's an intriguing thing to do. And the last half hour, my mind is blown and I'm loving it. And it just changed my whole perception of the first hour and a half. It's really, ours is the only timeline in which Green Book could take Best Picture from this film. Because that makes no sense at all. It really is an amazing achievement.
You say that, my friend, and I just think back to some other really bad Best Picture choices over the years, and I wonder if it's ours is not the only timeline.
That's fair. Ours is the only Academy. How about that?
Yeah, let's put it that way.
All right.
But yeah, for sure. Let's turn to another film that made both our lists, and that's Black Panther.
Oh man, yeah,
man, what an achievement!
Yep.
Not only cinematically, and for its look, which you know it won production design and all those awards.
Yeah.
But also for the world that it built.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the agency that it gave its characters and its culture and so, you know, the response in the community, people of other of color had to this film is well deserved, and it was so affirming and so great to see on the screen. On top of the fact that it was a great action picture, a great Marvel movie, right. But so much more meaningful than just that. And big props to Ryan Coogler. I think one of the biggest disappointments was I don't think he got a Best Director nomination, did he?
Nominated for Best Film, though.
For Best Film, but you know he directed the heck out of it, put it that way.
For sure.
And deserves props there. What'd you like most about Black Panther, man?
Yeah, I mean, I have three MCU movies of Spider-Man, three superhero movies on my top 10. And a lot of that is just because they're the most fun movies for me personally. There's no bad moment in those movies. I just love them and they're so fun. And that is a lot of movie going for me. And Black Panther was that and more, a lot of what you said. It had not only the best villain, but it was this genre transcending MCU movie that broke all of the kind of the tropes and the normal story beats of an MCU. I shouldn't even say MCU, of a superhero movie.
Yeah.
I was like, no, we're a film that features superhero elements, but we're a film talking about real issues. And it was just an amazing thing to do, to be like, there are superhero movies and regular movies. And this one is a regular movie. Like it's a really good regular movie that just happens to have superheroes in it. But yeah, amazing acting. It was probably the least expositive origin story. Like it wasn't like Batman's parents died again or whatever. It just kind of like threw you in and you understood it. There's no questions of who Black Panther is and why he became Black Panther. Amazing group of actors, not just for a superhero movie, but all of them separately in every film they've ever been in. Just an amazing group, all on point throughout the whole film, being quippy and funny when they're being intense and serious, when they're you know, being earnest and heartfelt, or when they're kicking ass, there's just never a moment when I'm taken out because of, you know, a weird line or something. But yeah, just so great to see an amazing writer director in Coogler take the reins of one of these giant blockbusters and not do it in a way that, that Joss did, right? With Avengers in 2012, right, whenever that was, which kind of like took the MCU to the next level and was like, this is how good these superhero movies could be. But he really took the reins of this giant blockbuster series and didn't compromise on how good a film it could be, not just how good a superhero story it could be, which was really cool.
Right.
Well, look at what I've done. I should have taken you back long ago. Instead, we are both abandoned here.
Well, maybe your home's the ones that's lost. That's why they can't find us.
All right, so I think that might be the last one that overlaps our lists.
In the top 10s.
All right. In the top 10. There are some movies in your top 10 that appear later in my list. I guess just thinking about the top 10,
sure,
that each of us has listed, are there any surprises on my list that you wouldn't have expected to see there, or are they mostly just, I'm not even sure I saw that film yet, kind of responses?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen four or five of them. I think Annihilation surprised me the most, which obviously we talked about, but I think it's so weird.
It is.
That I was surprised that it was on my own, too, in looking back at last year's movies.
You were surprised at how weird we are, Ben.
It took my top three, and I need to go back and listen to our Overthink episode about it. We spent over an hour talking about it.
I'm afraid to, actually.
I'm a little afraid, too. I'm maybe blocking that out, but I think I was most surprised by that. Yeah, I guess out of the remaining ones, which one would you want me to see? Is that a fair question to ask?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
The ones that aren't on mine that appear on yours.
The ones that aren't on yours but appear on mine, which would I want you to see? Let me scroll down because you've been generous enough to provide me your entire list.
Sure.
And I don't want to. It even appears, at least two of them appear in. Actually, three of them.
There you go.
Appear in your wish you'd seen list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the Black Klansman.
Yep.
You Were Never Really Here. And First Reformed.
Yeah.
And let me talk about First Reformed first in just a sense. You know, I did a podcast on First Reformed. A couple of other friends of mine and I talked about the film, and it was also really, really impactful. Impactful also in the kinds of ways Annihilation was for me, that it just kept me thinking, and I wasn't quite sure what my reaction to the film was right after I finished seeing it. And I had a lot of questions that continue to burn, but are important questions.
Yeah.
And it was a hard film to watch because of its subject matter. But also, you know, it's got a little bit, kind of like Annihilation. You have to have a willing suspension of disbelief about some things. It's got a little bit of a fantasy sequence in the film. And, you know, I know during the podcast, we were all like, what is that about? I'm not sure. But again, a film that's grown in estimation in my mind,
yeah,
since it came out and since I did that podcast, and I would definitely put that probably at the top of the hey, you should see this next. But you've also wanted to see it, and I could say similar things about Black Klansman. Mm-hmm. Black Klansman for me was maybe the most important film to see at this. In our timeline, as you said earlier, yes. You know, it's so relevant, even though it's a period piece, but it's so relevant to what's happening today. And Spike Lee did a masterful job, not only in writing it, for which he got the Academy Award, but also for directing it and also being willing to just call the shots as he sees them and really have a couple of sequences in there where he's just right up front and basically says what this film is all about. And I just think it's so important. It's a film that you know, people can see over the years and appreciate it on a lot of different levels for that. But I think it's so important to see it right now.
Yeah.
So Black Klansman for sure on that. And You Were Never Really Here. Oh, my gosh. You know, Joaquin Phoenix The first time I remember being kind of blown away from him, it wasn't the first time I'd seen him, but the first time that he blew me away was in Gladiator.
Yep.
Where I just felt like, wow, this guy is nailing this character so much so that I don't even know who he is as an actor. I just know the character.
I think he elevates that movie from just being this really cool action flick to being something greater.
Yeah, to being something, you know, the creepy psychological aspect that he brings to it really gives you a sense of the depth of, you know, what was wrong with that Roman Empire at the time.
It really does.
And obviously has parallels throughout history, but yeah, and he had a heck of a year in 2018. He had three films released where he was the lead or the co-lead.
Oh, wow.
The Sisters Brothers, which I just saw and is worth seeing. It wouldn't have made my top 30 for sure. It might have snuck into that last 10 to make the 40. But
John C. Reilly?
John C. Reilly, and it's a Western, but it's raw, and it's more than just that. It's a film about siblings that are broken, and you understand why that is. Jake Gyllenhaal and who else? Riz Ahmed in it too.
Oh, wow.
Really, really good and a beautiful film. I mean, they really treat the landscape well, as any Western should. But anyways, Joaquin was fantastic in that. And then he did a film called Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot,
which
is one of the best films about the 12-step recovery sort of niche. I don't know, that's not maybe a fair word to use. You know, the people doing it, it showed that process seemed really authentic to me. And it just felt like, oh, okay, I'm really seeing not the Hollywood version of what people go through in these kinds of things, but, you know, what it's really like.
Yeah.
And the bonus for me beyond Joaquin's performance, which I thought was fantastic, was who else is in it that had an amazing – oh, Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill plays a role where it was 20 minutes into the film before I realized it was Jonah Hill.
Wow.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Wow.
So that's way worth seeing. But the reason I got to Joaquin Phoenix is because of the film You Were Never Really Here, that for me, you know, put that third on your list of go see next.
Okay.
That is not only a scary method performance by Joaquin that I thought should have been nominated as one of the best performances of the year, but I believe it's a film directed by Lynn Ramsey, right? Yeah, Lynn Ramsey. And she always does such a great job of creating these stories that have people that you can't easily peg, right? That a cursory glance you could stereotype into one kind of character or another. But by the end of the film, you've felt the depth of the human being. And that character that she built and the way she told this story, that is a harrowing story. I mean, it's about pedophilia, organized pedophilia, and Joaquin's kind of a brutal rescuer, if you will. But man, that's another film that has stayed with me. I've rented it several times since I saw it on the screen, and and I find more depth in it every time. And I think Lynn Ramsey is a great filmmaker. Her work should be very much recognized. And if you aren't familiar with her work, you should check it out, folks, because she makes some very, very good films. And You Were Never Really Here is definitely one of them. So yeah, for sure. What about films on my list that didn't make yours, but you're curious about?
I mean, The Favorite is one of those that just, there's a lot of the films, the three you mentioned, and The Favorite, just going off of the kind of the next one, are ones that they'd never appeared in the theater in our town. So I wasn't able to see without traveling an hour.
That's so harsh.
Right?
Yeah.
MoviePass doesn't do much if it doesn't have movies you want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can just stop after MoviePass doesn't do much.
Right. That's a good point.
Sorry. So
a lot of my 2019 is going to be seeing movies from 2018 that I should have seen. So I'll just be 6 months behind you in those, but I'm sure I'll catch up eventually.
Well, that's always the case, especially because at the end of the calendar year, they release a ton of movies that are quality movies because they're trying to get them, you know, to qualify for award season. And it's rare that anybody really, unless they're a critic that, you know, gets free screenings or gets screeners or whatever, gets to see all those movies in such a short period of time. So,
for sure,
you know, during January, I'm always trying to, you know, I'm always catching up from movies that are great that just got released at the end of the year. So,
yeah. And as much as we gripe on the Academy for, and the whole Academy, the whole award system as a whole, not just the Academy, I guess.
Yeah.
For saying that this is the best, you know, cinematographer, writer, whatever it might be. This is the best film for this, and how it's just, it's way more complex than that. It's not objective. It's an art. The coolest thing about those awards, and I think the reason that I watch them and pay attention to them the most, is hearing about films like First Reformed that I had heard of. I edited your podcast on it, so I knew about the film, obviously.
Right.
But hearing after the nominees were announced, and a lot of people thought that Ethan Hawke was snubbed for that, for Best Actor. He just did an amazing job. That alone makes me want to go back and watch First Reformed. You know, it came out a year ago, almost however long ago, 6 months or so. And because of not only snubs, but people getting awards or nominated for things that would have otherwise just gone under my radar, I think is the best reason to have those awards for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I kind of view any lists that I see from almost anybody,
right.
You know, especially critics that are going to see way more films probably than I am.
Sure.
But I just peruse those lists for, oh, you know, this person whose reviews I read regularly and I understand their voice and what they like and don't like and why in general says that this is a good film. I haven't seen it. I should go see it.
Yep.
And, you know, those lists kind of feed my queue over the course of the year, really. I keep turning to those lists and saying, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that. I should go check that out somehow.
One notable one. I was going to say, oh no, Ballad of Buster Scruggs you have there. It's in your 30s.
Yeah, but let's talk about it, because you had two runner-up films, right? Ballad of Buster Scruggs and A Quiet Place, and both those films appeared someplace on my list. So let's talk about Buster Scruggs first. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's Coen's be Coening is what I wrote
exactly.
For it,
right?
It's hilarious, and it's violent, and it's stuff I've never seen in film before. Amazing vignettes, loved all of the performances. I think the only thing it left me wanting was more of a connection between them other than just Wild West,
right.
more thematic other than tragedy, I guess, but some just amazingly well-directed, well-written, vignettes.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah. And I liked, I mean, your opening comment is perfect because it's the Coens being Coen-y,
right?
It's such, those guys are amazing, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They're just amazing.
Yeah.
Every film they make, even if they're not the film, you know, any particular one that maybe doesn't hit you in as an overwhelmingly great film,
yeah.
As opposed to others that they've made, every one that they make is uniquely their voice.
Yes.
And so, you know, so Coen-y. And I love that voice. I love hearing, you know, I love seeing the characters they build and the twists they put in their plots and all those kinds of things. So very much agree with you. And for me, you know, there are some of the vignettes, some chapters, because it's a ballad with several chapters, right?
Yeah.
Some chapters that I wouldn't say they fall flat. They don't, you know, I was engaged in every single one of them, but I definitely have other ones that are my favorite. And I'm not sure that there's a better opening to the film, to any film this year, than the first one with the Tim Blake Nelson.
Yes.
The singing cowboy Buster Scruggs.
Breaking the fourth wall the whole time.
Let me tell you, hey listeners, in addition to finding my favorite films list, I also make a list every year of my favorite film performances. And wow, that is definitely on there. Tim Blake Nelson going gangbusters with the singing cowboy thing.
So good.
In that first,
he's only in it for like 10 minutes.
I know, but sets the tone for the entire film.
True.
I think, and as he should, because he's Buster Scruggs, the title character, right?
Yeah.
Sets that whole vignette, sets the tone in not only its twisted sense of humor and its Coen-ness, but also how they're going to treat Western. Irreverently, side-eyed, You know, just fantastic. So I'm glad it's on your honorable mention list.
Yeah.
Because I think it very much deserves that.
Yeah.
Where did it appear on my list? I think it appeared in my third 20, or my third 10, rather. So my top 30, put it that way. But your other honorable mention was A Quiet Place, and that appeared in my top 20.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. What'd you like about that film?
Yeah. Written by Jim from The Office and directed by Jim from The Office. And Halpert did a great job. Jaw-dropping performances throughout the film.
Yeah.
This one, as Roma punches me in the heart at the end, this one punches me in the heart at the very beginning. Just a rough start that just breaks your world from the very beginning. And the buy-in to this, I guess it's like this alternate reality, whatever it might be,
right?
Monster zombie thing going on,
right?
Is quick, right? You don't need a lot of exposition. It does a good job of not like saying in a world where something, you know, you just jump in and you're going, and there's no questions asked. You're fine. Does a good job of building that world.
Well, that's one of the things I really like about it is the fact that we're not worried about the big picture.
Right.
About these aliens and what has happened to the world and how does this, what's going on, and et cetera. We're just worried about this family surviving.
Yep. Exactly.
And that was brilliant.
Yeah. And all the four main actors, I think all of them are amazing. Obviously the biggest one, the award winning one, is the bathtub scene with Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
And it's incredible, right? It's an insane piece of acting. It's stuff that the human body, I feel like, shouldn't be able to do. And Krasinski tells the story of when they were filming the bathroom scene or the bathtub scene, how they were, you know, she's crying and she's sweating and she's pregnant and like all of this is happening and there's a monster next to her and she's trying not to scream. And then all of a sudden, you know, he'd say cut as he's directing his wife and she'd sit up and she'd be like, all right, what are we having for lunch? Tuna sandwiches? Okay, here we go. She'd just break out of it. And he just blew his mind every day filming with her. And obviously, he's, you know, they're married and he's going to say amazing things. But I thought that was cool that she's not, that you could do that without being method in some way.
Yeah.
Or without it affecting you.
Yeah.
Having to like break out of that intensity. And she's just acting, my dear boy, you know, yeah. She's just that good at pretending that she can do that.
Well, and from every interview I've ever seen with them, whether it's, you know, a very formal interview or a very loose kind of a thing, they just seem like such normal people.
Right.
And she just seems like so grounded and so not, you know, highfalutin about her acting or whatever. She's just, you know, and then on top of that, she's one of the most amazing actresses we've got these days.
Yeah.
I will drop anything to go see the latest Emily Blunt movie.
Same.
And I can tick off her performances that all are like just amazingly kick-ass, right? I mean, from Looper to what's the movie with Tom Cruise where there's also a future timeline science fiction thingy in it?
It was Live, Die, Repeat. That's the movie that had like three different names.
Yeah, that's right. It got released three different titles. Anyways, that movie.
Yeah.
And she was just Mary Poppins, which, you know,
Edge of Tomorrow.
You're right. That was one of the titles, but she was just Mary Poppins. And even though, you know, that didn't make my lists, let's just put it that way. It wasn't because of her. She can do anything. And she was great in the movie. And so were the rest of the little acting troupe in that. But, you know, I can't tell you enough about, one, Krasinski's direction, to the way he helmed, you know, and wrote the film, right? And also the people he brought around to help him make this film. Marco Beltrami's score is just really paired well with the visuals, and the visuals are shot by Charlotte Bruce Christensen. Mm-hmm. Her cinematography is great, and Christopher Tellefson did the editing, and that was also, you know, in a thriller horror kind of movie. If those three things aren't happening, you're not really going to get the impact you want.
Yep.
And boy, it got impact in spades.
Yeah.
So, that's definitely made my top 20, just not quite in my top 10, but that just because, you know, buy me a couple beers and we could argue that one out.
Yep. Yeah, man. And cool to see people that that aren't horror movie people.
Yes.
Thriller type people do a movie that's so different than at least how I've pigeonholed them in my mind, at least from their IMDb filmography says that they should be good at these things. rom-coms and action movies or whatever it might be. So cool to see them be that successful, especially Krasinski as directing it. And I think he maybe adapted the screenplay, whatever he did.
Yeah.
To be that good at it that right away is infuriating.
Well, and in a lot of ways, kind of like Get Out, right?
Yeah, seriously, Jordan Peele, man.
Someone you don't expect to be into horror and just nails it right out of the gate.
The comedy guy. He's the slapstick comic.
And hilarious comedy guy.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, a guy that's on a comedy sitcom somewhere, but just a very funny human being. So, parallels to that film as well. But
that's a good transition if you want to right now.
Yeah.
Get into 2019?
Sure. Yeah.
Because that tops my list of 2019 is Us, the next Jordan Peele.
Seeing that?
No, the movie Us.
I have not seen it.
Oh, not seen it. It comes out next week, I believe. But the movie Us by Jordan Peele, his follow-up to Get Out.
Yeah, I'm not that anticipatory for it, only because I'm generally speaking not a horror film guy. Those aren't the films that really sort of thrill me the most. They don't leave that big an impact on me. Although the two films that we just mentioned, A Quiet Place and Get Out, definitely did.
And I'm hoping he does the same, because again, I'm not big into horror at all.
I would have thought he would have kind of gone in a different direction with a different genre after he had such great success with Get Out. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't, I didn't expect a romantic comedy or anything, but
we'll see. I mean, there's so much substance.
Maybe it's more complex than just how I'm envisioning it.
And just like Get Out was, right? Get Out was screened as or pitched as a horror movie or a suspense thriller. And it ended up being this multi-layer commentary on race in America and the history of race in America. And I'm hoping this is the same.
Yeah.
I really hope it's not just this stabby horror movie where it's some twist ending. Oh, no, she was the killer the whole time. But
well, I can't imagine Jordan would do that. Right.
Exactly. And that's exactly the hope that I have going in. I've seen enough Key and Peele to know that there's depth in everything he does, whether it's slapstick or horror.
Right.
And so I have very high hopes for that. And I haven't seen any reviews or anything. I'm going to go in as blind as I can, but really excited to see that for sure.
Yeah. And I guess, I should let everybody know, you know this, Ben, but our listeners don't. I try to stay away from trailers and sort of previews as much as I can, because my favorite thing to do is to walk into a theater not knowing a thing about the movie I'm going to see and having it unfold without any preconception on my part. That's hard to do. Maybe it's a folly for me to try, but that's my thing. But it's funny that I say that, and at the same time, two of the films that I'm expecting, actually the three films that I'm sort of anticipating, at least in the near term, more than any others, and I'll start with less to more, Captain Marvel, because Brie Larson,
sure,
and what they can do with another superhero female character. I'm excited to see what happens there. Not so much because I even know about the comic character Captain Marvel. I haven't read up on that, or I didn't experience those comics when I was a youngin. So my anticipation is more about what is Brie Larson going to bring to this universe. Second would be the final Avengers film, just because I'm really ready for some things to wrap up with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and sort of move on to other things. Because as we both experienced with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, there seems to be many other good ways to create wonderful comic book movies that aren't in the ways that have been created up until now. And I'd love to see more of that kind of an approach. Something fresh, something amazing, something that leaves you going, yes, this is what a comic book experience was like and should be like in the cinema. So that's kind of why I'm anticipating the final Avengers film, even though it may not be final, but you know what I mean. And then more than those two, kind of at the top of my list, is the next Godzilla movie.
What?
And do not scoff, ladies and gentlemen.
I scoffed.
Do not scoff. I've been waiting for a really great Godzilla movie since the very first Godzilla movie. And, you know, slogging through the umpteen versions of bad puppetry, of bad guy in a Godzilla suit, of poor scripts, of great special effects, but characters you could care less about and plot that is just so terrible. And I think things might be coming together in all those areas where finally we get a Godzilla movie that's got characters that care about in it, with good special effects and a story that makes sense. So I'm hoping that this next one is beautiful. It's got some of the regulars from a previous one, right? Are you up on this Godzilla movie, Ben?
Not at all.
Oh, it's got Billy Bobby Brown, or is that her name? What's her name?
Millie Bobby Brown.
I'm sorry, Millie Bobby Brown.
Okay.
My bad.
Of Stranger Things fame.
Yeah, she plays a lead in it.
Okay.
And so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a breakout, or maybe it'll turn out to be a breakout.
She's broken already.
She definitely broke on Netflix, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's got Ken Watanabe in it again.
Okay.
And what I'm hoping for is a Godzilla. The Godzilla character that I've loved since the very beginning is the one that was more than just a monster. It had a little bit of a human quality to it, right? It even had kind of a sense of humor, if you could say that in a large lizard.
Right.
And I hope they get back to some of that without going camp, because we don't need to go camp. They need to stay, they need to take it seriously. But we'll see. Anyways, those are the three films that I'm kind of anticipating.
Sure. All right.
Yeah.
Am I picking three? I can pick three.
Yeah.
Three more after us.
Yeah.
So I'll try to pick three that aren't just like, oh, obviously, The Irishman, right? Scorsese's big film, or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino's. These are films we're all going to see. But ones that stand out to me that I have anticipated for a while. The first is Rian Johnson's next film, which is called Knives Out. And all we really know about it is that Chris Evans is in it. Daniel Craig is in it, and Toni Collette, and it's some type of murder mystery.
You can't beat that cast,
right? And it will be interesting to see Chris Evans do something that isn't superhero-y.
Right?
He's kind of proven that he's a pretty good actor.
Yeah,
in those superhero movies, but acting in a movie is different than an MCU movie. So it'll be interesting to see him do that. And I love everything Rian Johnson has ever done or ever will do. So
well, and Toni Collette is one of the best actresses ever. By the way. I'm guessing you didn't see Hereditary.
No, I did not. I'm not a horror movie guy.
Which, again, if you're up sometime for a horror movie and you want to see a crazy, crazy horror movie.
I heard it's good.
Go see that. It was good.
Okay, you saw it. All right.
And more than that, she was amazing.
Okay.
She deserved a nomination. She had one of the performances of the year, as far as I'm concerned. But Toni Collette, almost everything she does is that good,
yes.
Right?
If there's anyone that dislikes horror more than us, it would be the Academy. So, yeah, not a lot of nominations coming out.
This is true.
And then I would say, I never thought I would say I'm looking forward to a Little Women adaptation. But, dude, Saoirse Ronan, Timothy Chalamet is in it, apparently Emma Watson, and directed by Greta Gerwig.
I think every millennial just blew up.
Right? Oh, I'm so excited, man. I'm so excited.
That is a good one.
Yeah. Oh, man. And then the last one that I didn't know about until today is Ford versus Ferrari, a James Mangold jam.
Oh.
Which Christian Bale, John Bernthal, and Matt Damon are all in it.
Wow.
And it's the story of between Ford and Ferrari to win, I guess, the Le Mans in 1966. So I know nothing about this other than I love the director and I like a lot of the people in it.
Well, cool.
So I'm looking forward to that too. But I'd say Rian Johnson, or I'd say Us, tops my list. Jordan Peele's movie, which comes out in a week.
Quickly followed by Rian Johnson's movie.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, yeah, those are great films to anticipate. I'm glad we got to share that. And, I think that's about it for our conversation. We could go on and on and on, but, people are already bored, so we should stop.
True. Sounds good.
Hey, you can find my list of favorite films this year at jcspace.com, where, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you can also find a separate list of my favorite film performances of 2018. So check those things out if you like. Ben, any place people can find your list?
Yeah, benhelms.com. I'll post this week. By the time this podcast is posted, it'll be there. It'll be the latest blog there, and I'll link to yours from that as well.
Excellent. And I'll link to yours as well, my friend. So,
I love it. All right.
Hey, man, thanks for the conversation.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. And I look forward to the next time we can talk about anything that's really interesting to us, whether or not it's interesting to anybody else.
You know I'll record that.
All right, Ben. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Feel free to share your comments on the web post for this podcast, which you can find along with other podcasts on cinesoul.com. That's CineSoul.com. You can find my lists of favorite films and favorite performances, along with other posts about films, TV shows, and things I've been reading or listening to, on my personal website at jcspace.com. That's jcspace.com. You'll also find links to Ben's lists on these posts. Thanks again to Ben Helms for being my guest and for co-producing and editing this episode, and to you for listening. See you next time!